Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host in the studio today is retired State Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. And on today's show, we're going to do our annual Chaplain's Christmas show with Chaplain Colonel Buddy Wind and a very special guest. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Chaplains play an important role in our armed forces. Whether our service members are Christian, Muslim, Jewish, Buddhist, or one of the hundreds of other faith traditions, our chaplain corps is ready to meet their spiritual needs. Embedded in units across the force, our chaplains advise our commanders and ensure the free exercise rights for all service members are upheld, including those who hold no faith tradition. Chaplain teams spiritually enlighten and rejuvenate us during good times and console and heal us during the bad. They have answered a higher calling to their faith and their fellow service members.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now is the State Chaplain for the Minnesota National Guard, Chaplain Colonel Buddy Wynn. Chaplain, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Thank you, sir. Same to you. And, sir, you understand you've been the State Chaplain since March of 2020. Can you tell our listeners, what does that mean?
Well, what that means, Tom, is I've got the distinct privilege and the unique blessing of providing leadership and supervision and guidance and resources for the unit ministry teams across the state of Minnesota. We've got upwards of 13,000 soldiers and airmen, and as General Mankey said, we've got chaplains embedded with all of them. And since March of 2020, it's been a unique challenge given the environment.
And Chaplain General referred to the Chaplain Corps, and that's you and your chaplains and their chaplain assistants. How many people does that entail now?
In Minnesota, between the Army National Guard and the Air National Guard, chaplains and religious affairs specialists or religious affairs airmen, we're right in the neighborhood of 56, 57 people. I only know that because we sent out Christmas cards yesterday.
All right. Good work, Chaplain. Chaplain, one of the things we talk about every December, or quite often when we meet in December for this special show, is the reason that you need so many people in the Chaplain Corps, and part of it comes to over the last 20 years, there have been a lot of deployments. We've had people out on federal deployments. We've had people called up on state active duty. But when we send out a group of soldiers, for instance, for a year over in Kuwait, there are chaplains with them, and there's chaplains that stay back here to minister to the families.
That's right. Chaplains that go forward receive a tremendous amount of training. Our motto in the Minnesota National Guard is always ready. And so we know at little or no notice, you know, we may be called on to respond to the needs of our state or our nation. And so chaplains are more than just people who fill a pulpit on Sunday. Our chaplains work in the institutional realm to include prisons, hospitals, palliative care, hospice, and that makes us really unique. We don't live on active duty military installations. We bring a wealth of experience. We've got a good number of our chaplains who were prior enlisted soldiers, so they know what it's like to be out in the field with a rucksack and running out of what we call pogie bait and treats and snacks and bartering for that sort of thing, just living kind of a rough and tumble life. And it really brings confidence and hope to soldiers to know that they've got someone that they can go to as soon as we can get somebody there. The ratio is about 1 to 1,000. You get a chaplain for about every 1,000 soldiers. But be with them in their best times as well as their worst times. From cradle to grave, really, the chaplains provide care for the entire Department of Defense family.
And, Chaplain, I've been over to Kuwait a couple of times and was there. I think the first time I saw you on a deployment was 2011. But one of the things I noticed was that, you know, you don't take all Lutherans. You don't take all Jews. You don't take all Catholics. All those troops that are there, they come from every denomination, and you have to try to take care of them in the best way possible.
You're absolutely right. And the chaplain has a responsibility to implement the commander's religious support program. It's not the chaplain's program. It's the commander's program. They ultimately are responsible for ensuring everyone in their command has the opportunity to worship or engage religious tradition in accordance with that tradition. But the other thing, and that's the beauty of this democratic experiment here in America, is that there are folks who have no faith at all, or they choose to believe not in a deity, but perhaps maybe a system of morality that doesn't include a deity or a higher power. For chaplains, it doesn't matter, and chaplains have experiences with soldiers, because when you're a Lutheran pastor that comes to the armed forces and you've met a Jewish soldier, a Buddhist soldier, a Wiccan soldier, maybe a Troth or a Norse soldier who has the desire to grow a beard and you've got to do a religious accommodations interview, your eyes get opened quickly. And if you can manage to just treat everyone with dignity and respect based on their choices and their faith tradition, you're going to have great, strong connections that transcend their religious belief.
We're speaking with Chaplain Colonel Buddy Wynn on Minnesota Military Radio. And Doug, when you were the state command sergeant major, you went over to Kuwait, I don't know how many times, to visit with the troops who were over there. But when they're over there and they're stuck out in the middle of the desert for a year, how important is it for them to have the chaplain corps there and somebody to minister to those needs?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, Tom. And just from my own personal experience, I can just tell you that the chaplain corps, having that presence, is just invaluable. And we all need, regardless of our leadership level, we need that person or those persons that we can talk to. And Chaplain Buddy Wynn and I served together, and we've spent a lot of time together. And we had regular meetings, if for nothing else, just to say, hey, how are you? How are things? Anything I can do to help? And that service that's provided to our service members, like I said, is invaluable. And we need it, especially in that environment where the leadership can't be everywhere. And that chaplain, that ministry corps, is out there another set of eyes and ears for the commander.
Yeah, I would add too, Doug, you know, chaplains really have to have their finger on the pulse of the command. And because commanders can't be everywhere, or in some cases, and we may have a guest that speaks about this later, and you can attest to this, commanders don't get to see everything. You know, they're shielded sometimes, good intent, but not great execution, shielded from the things that aren't going well in the command. Nobody likes to bring bad news to the boss. So chaplains can be that, you know, I don't want to say intelligence gatherer, because confidentiality is beyond the grave between the chaplain and the soldier. But we can identify trends, and we can identify perhaps, you know, things going in a particular direction that we can help the commander to impact or influence based on religious advisement, which is just as important. What we do is providing religious support.
Chaplain, I've heard the old adage that the commander says the mechanics in the motor pool take care of the equipment, but my chaplain corps take care of the troops. And they both have to work together so that we're ready for anything. And speaking of ready for anything, we had some troops in Kuwait. They're still there, and they have a rapid reaction force. And I think they were the first ones to get to the Kabul airport in Afghanistan when we were closing that down. And you had some experience with your people on that mission.
Absolutely incredible. I wish for the opportunity in the future for that story to be fully told. They were at Kabul right there in the early part of August of this year and ended up teaming with the 82nd Airborne and other elements of the National Guard. We had Navy personnel there. When that bomb went off on August 26th, unit ministry teams were there as a part of that MASCAL response, not just the physical MASCAL response where we want to get those with immediate needs to life, limb, and eyesight, but the chaplains are there to do the spiritual triage. And what an incredible story. Our unit ministry team from 1st of the 194 Combined Arms Battalion, the task force, was there. And in fact, their commander is a War College classmate of mine, and I look forward to having him and all of the folks home so that we can thank them and greet them with open arms for the incredible work that they did on almost no notice.
And Chaplain, when they got airlifted out of there and came back to Kuwait, to understand that they put their equipment away and they had one day off to recover and then right back to work, how what kind of shape were they in after that?
Sounds about right, but at that point in the deployment, you're not surprised by that sort of thing. And think about this, Tom. The same thing happened in early 2020 when we had the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Some of those same soldiers were at Camp Ripley tearing through Connex's in the middle of the night and making their way down to the convention center to immediately go out in the streets of Minneapolis and provide protection against violence and vandalism.
And in that case, a lot of them had reported to Camp Ripley thinking they were going to train there for a weekend. And what do? They ended up down in the Twin Cities for days.
And you know what? They returned to Camp Ripley and ultimately ended out at the National Training Center in the middle of the California desert and proved that we can meet the standard, meet any mission that comes our way, and we do it with excellence.
Always ready.
Always ready.
Chaplain, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, we've got a special guest that's going to join us, and I want to talk a little bit about 20 years in Afghanistan. Our guest today is Chaplain Colonel Buddy Wynn. And this is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host in the studio today is Doug Wortham, and we've been talking to Chaplain Colonel Buddy Wynn on our annual Christmas show. And Chaplain, we've got a very special guest in the studio today. Would you do the honors?
Tom, we do have a very special guest in the studio today, and I'm honored to introduce General Joseph Votel. General Votel is a hometown soldier, graduated from Creighton High School right here in St. Paul. And after graduating from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point as an infantry officer, his career has spanned multiple countries, combat areas, commands, and he culminated in his final assignment as the commander of Central Command, which has responsibility for all of the countries in the Middle East. So we could spend a lot of time talking about his career, but I'd rather have him tell us himself. So, General Votel, welcome to the show.
Chaplain, it's great to be with you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Welcome back, General, and in case our audience didn't get it, you retired as a four-star general and spend an awful lot of time over in the Middle East, but General, you are a hometown product. You grew up in the Twin Cities. Can you give us a little background?
Yeah, Tom, first off, it's great to be back out here with you. So I grew up in St. Paul, and as Chaplain mentioned, I graduated from Creighton High School. So I, grew up on the west side of St. Paul. I worked right downtown at the Little Sisters of the Poor, where I met my wife, my girlfriend at the time, and I got married down at the Church of the Assumption. And St. Paul is a place that has always been home for us, and someplace we always thought about coming back to, and then eventually when we retired, we did. So it's great to be home.
Well, General, welcome back from your military trials. We're happy to have you here in the Twin Cities, and we're thrilled to have you back on the show. General, we wanted to, in this segment, the next one, we want to talk about Afghanistan some, and I know that you commanded troops for many, many years, and you went to Afghanistan untold number of times. Can you share a little bit of that with us?
So I had the good fortune of being in command of the Army's 75th Ranger Regiment on 9/11. And so shortly after that, almost immediately after those tragic events of that day, we began planning and preparing because we knew something was coming. We just didn't know exactly what it was. And within days, within just a short period of time, we figured out that it was Afghanistan that we would eventually deploy to. So I had the opportunity to be part of the first contingent that went on the ground in Afghanistan, particularly in southern Afghanistan. We parachuted in and conducted our initial operations and then continued to conduct operations, for the remainder of that deployment. And in fact, the unit that I was part of, stayed engaged with Afghanistan for almost the entire 20 years that we were involved there. And then I had a variety of opportunities to go back and serve in leadership positions in Afghanistan with Special Operations Task Forces. I was the Assistant Division Commander to the 82nd Airborne Division when we were there. I was there as a JSOC Commander, and then, of course, as the United States Central Command Commander, I was responsible for everything that was happening in Afghanistan, and had a pretty senior commander working for me in that capacity as well.
So, General, you oversaw a lot of missions with special forces in that part of the world.
Yeah, no, it's an area that really called for kind of the unique capabilities of America's Special Operations Forces, and so they really played a critical role, not just in Afghanistan, but in Iraq and Syria and a variety of other places around this very troubled but important, strategically important region for the United States.
And Chaplain, over that same period of 20 or so years, the Minnesota National Guard had many missions to Afghanistan. I can remember some of the ag missions that they went on, ag liaison, I think they called them. But you've helped a lot of our Minnesota National Guard soldiers and airmen deal with their missions to Afghanistan.
Yeah, I have. I had the opportunity to deploy to Iraq in 2007, 2008. During the surge, and then again in 2011, 2012, we were in Iraq and Kuwait as we were shutting the war down maybe for the first time. And then I was back in 2018, 2019. And so I've been both ends of the operational opportunity to lead chaplains, unit ministry teams, care for soldiers, but also here in a rear detachment capacity when they come home, getting them the help and the support and the care that they need and making meaning of what they've experienced.
This is our annual Chaplain's Christmas Show on Minnesota Military Radio. And Doug, you were the state command sergeant major for 5 years. You've got a lot of buddies and a lot of soldiers that served in Afghanistan while you were in the military as well.
Yeah, I sure do. And, you know, throughout the entire globe. And, because we're here and we're talking about the strength or the importance of our chaplain corps to our organization, the deployments— as the chaplain said, they're there to help get us spiritually prepared, mentally prepared to go out the door. But I think in some cases, more importantly, when we come back, the invaluable peace that that chaplain brings to us and our in all those that I served with and others, I just can't express it enough.
And General, I want to come back to you. When I was in the military, I was in the Air Force, and of course we got orders to go to Vietnam, and so off to Cameron Bay I went. And that was a controversy back in those times because there were anti-war riots and all kinds of things going on. But to us, we got orders to go, and we had a mission to accomplish, and we went and did the best thing we could, and the best we could, and then came back. It had to be the same thing for your special forces troops and all of those folks that you commanded and said, okay, we got to go to Afghanistan. Here's the job to do. Let's go get it done and get home safe.
Well, you're exactly right, Tom. And you know that, and that's the way a lot of our military professionals look at it, is they have a job to do and they just want to kind of get on with it. And of course, in the years since 9/11, we've seen literally generations of soldiers and Marines and airmen and sailors come into the service for the specific purpose of serving in kind of a post 9/11 period. They saw what happened to our country. They felt a need to kind of step forward and help the country in a time of need. And so it really came for very, very noble reasons. So they're really focused on doing the work of the nation, and they don't have an opportunity to get caught up in the policy and the politics around this kind of stuff. And they're really, really very, very, very mission focused.
And General, the last time I saw you in person, we were over at the state capitol for the 9/11 remembrance on the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and we had a lot of Gold Star families there. We had some politicians. We had a lot of veterans there, and it was an opportunity to take a look at, wow, where did those 20 years go, and what do we recall? And you gave a very moving speech that day.
Yeah, it was a wonderful day to be down there and to see all of that congregated in one location. I think was just really, really impressive. And I'm just so proud of the state of Minnesota for the way that they put the resources forward to make sure that we commemorated that 20th anniversary in such a moving and fitting way. But it brings back a lot. And, you know, what I tried to talk about that day was really the three stories of, you know, that we've had since 9/11. You know, there's the story of the day, what happened on that tragic day and how people responded to that. Then there's kind of the story of the end, which, you know, all of us experienced here just a few months ago as we watched the end of our activities in Afghanistan. That certainly left people a lot of mixed emotions. But the more important part, I think, are the stories in between. And these are the stories of the Minnesota National Guard or soldiers or sailors or Marines, airmen from different organizations that deployed, you know, at the request of their country, went forward, did their duty, did it loyally, did it nobly, tried to, you know, represent our country so well. And these are the things that I think are really important. So you can think about those three stories. To me, the most important part of it is the stories in between the beginning and the end.
And Chaplain, you were out of town when we did that 9/11, but Chaplain Pulliu was there. I was part of your chaplain corps, and he kind of pulled everything together and talked about ministering to all those troops that had served over all of those years. And I don't know how our troops could do it without the chaplain corps.
Well, you know, I had someone ask me when I was deployed in Iraq in 2007, Chaplain, who do you talk to? And I think in my young fervor and enthusiasm and maybe hubris, my response is, the Lord is my shepherd. And that is true. But I found myself climbing to out of a dark place simply because I was enduring the same challenges as everyone else. Chaplains are humans too, and we've got to look out for each other. We call that care to the caregiver. So if that chaplain hadn't come into my office and really just brought some encouragement, you know, that's what sustained me to get through myself. So as much as we care for our soldiers and their families, we also care for each other.
Well, Chaplain, good work, and to all of the chaplain corps here and around the world, I don't know how we could survive without them. Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the end of the Afghanistan experience for our troops. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, in the studio with my co-host, Doug Wortham, and Chaplain Colonel Buddy Wynn, and our special guest, retired four-star General Joseph Votel. General, you started telling us in the last segment that what you talked about on our 9/11 remembrance were three things. The day of 9/11 that caused so many people to be patriotic and stand up and say, I want to go serve my country. in the end of our 20 years in Afghanistan, and then in between is all the stories, and I want to get to those stories, but seems like we came to a sudden end in Afghanistan. And when we talked about the rapid reaction force going in to try to get people out, we didn't have the time. We spent 2 years at the end of the Vietnam War getting people out of Vietnam. We didn't have time at the end of Afghanistan. Seems like that ending wasn't the best, and a lot of our troops are kind of reacting negatively towards that. What's your view on how that came about?
Yeah, I think we've been we were on a track here. President Trump had made some policy choices, and that were put us on the track to bring our forces out of Afghanistan. And these are all decisions that are well within his constitutional authority as the president, and it's our job to implement that. And of course, the current president, President Biden, reinforced those things with the decision making. So, I'm sure it did seem sudden for a lot of people, but we were on a track for a number of months beforehand to do that. I think what really surprised me the most was not making a greater effort to try to get a lot of our Afghan partners out. This, of course, is has been front and center on this, and it's what caused a lot of the crush that we saw at Kabul International Airport was people. Desperate people trying to get out of the country and coming and hoping that the Americans and our allies there, our partners on the ground, could help them get out. So it certainly did seem that way. And I don't know anybody, myself included, or anybody that I've ever served with, that wanted to see Afghanistan end the way that it did. Ultimately, these things have to. They are usually resolved in a political negotiation, and that just was not feasible in this particular case, and so it kind of played out the way that it did.
General, I think what is overlooked is in those 10 days or 2 weeks that they were evacuating people out of the Afghanistan or Kabul airport, there are thousands and thousands of folks that were moved out of there very quickly. That was a heck of a mission.
It was, and my hat's off to everybody that played a role in that, the Air Force, the forces on the ground, the commands, and everybody involved in that. I think the numbers that I've seen have been around 125,000 people or more came out under very, very serious circumstances in Kabul, and so that's a real testament to our men and women and all their capabilities to get them out. So, I mean, that was Herculean in it. But, of course, there are a number that didn't make it out, and that's difficult as well. So,
and we're still working on those.
And we still are working on those. That's right.
Continue.
I hope we can as well.
General, did you have any clue that Afghanistan would fall to the Taliban that fast?
I didn't. I think certainly not that fast. I think anybody who has spent some time there recognized that once you pull the coalition out, the NATO coalition led by the Americans out, that you would be on a path that would ultimately lead in the direction that it went. But we did not. I did not think it would happen that quickly. And I think we underestimated just the influence of the Taliban and what they were able to do in the months between the announcement of our departure. Under both administrations here, and to kind of prepare the ground. I mean, in most cases, the cities they took over, these were bloodless battles. They're, if they can call them battles at all, they literally came into them and took them over, and the Afghan forces kind of melted into the countryside. So I think we probably underestimated that. I didn't think it would happen as quickly as it did. That's for sure.
This is our annual Chaplain's Christmas Show with Chaplain Colonel Buddy Wynn and retired General Joseph Votel. Doug, our troops over there, the Minnesota National Guard, were on that rapid reaction force, went in there, did their duty. They were able to get there quickly, and they were there till the end and came out, and they did a heck of a job as well.
Yeah, they sure did, and it was such a great story when we had the commander on to tell us about that notice he got at 2300, 11 p.m., said, you got 24 hours to be in Afghanistan, and they responded. And the great thing is it gives great credit to the planning that had gone into this well ahead of time. As Commander Helgestad said, he was like, we plan for everything and anything, and everything. So it was an interesting story and a great response.
And Chaplain, we've talked about this Afghanistan now and the end, and we'll get to some more stories, but there's a lot of your guard troops and a lot of other troops that have served in Afghanistan, and they're not feeling good about their service over there. Is this a moral injury? How should they think about their time in Afghanistan and how they served and the missions they went on?
That's a good question, Tom. And we would take two or three shows by themselves to discuss the topic of moral injury. That can occur when you've been told by someone in authority to do something that violates your belief system. There's a very important balance between your duty and your morals, and that's why chaplains are around to help soldiers deal with these sorts of things. Some people want to respond to the sound of gunfire and charge up the hill, and others are a little more resistant to that because of what's going on the outside of them. I'll talk about this in the next segment, but what's really important is to continue to ask the question about how do I make meaning out of this? You can't do it by yourself. You've got to do it in a community of people who may have gone through it with you, who can understand, who will listen, who give you a place where you can be safe to tell your story without judgment because of what you've done, to help you process. And really, it's a lifetime effort, Tom. I've been out of Iraq since 2007, been over a couple other times, but these are things I still wrestle with every day. I've got a loving wife, supportive family. You know, everybody pays a price when you go forward, and you've got to do it within a community.
General, I want to come back to you. You commanded a lot of troops and special forces troops and others that served in Afghanistan. Some of those troops probably feeling bad about their service there. How should they feel? How do you see it?
This is, I think, one of the things that's bothered me the most. You know, in the immediate aftermath of our departure, there was a cacophony of voices out there who were all too quick to declare this a meaningless engagement, and this was all done for naught. And I don't accept that at all. And what I try to tell people is that you have to look at service and sacrifice in the context in which it is performed. And our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines on the ground that conducted themselves so well. They did this under. We went to Afghanistan for a very noble reason. Our country had been attacked. We went there to try to address a threat that was a threat to our country. We tried to help the good Afghan people where we could. So it was a noble mission, and we cannot lose sight of that. And we have to always remind our veterans, our soldiers, and others that you have to look at service and sacrifice in the context in which it is presented, not in the aftermath of what happens in the end. You have no control of that. What you do have control over is what you did on the ground. And the vast majority of U.S. service men and women on the ground performed nobly and honorably and represented our country so well and did everything they could to advance the mission. And that's the message that has to resonate and has to really always be, foremost in our minds as we think about this.
General, that brings us back to the beginning, the day of 9/11, and so many of our veterans today signed up within days of that attack on 9/11 because they wanted to serve their country. They wanted to be patriotic, want to serve their country, do the right things, and they raised their hand and risked their lives to serve their country, and that's the start of what you just said. It's honorable. They did the right things. They performed their mission. They did it best way possible, and most of them hopefully got home safely. And so looking back based on the conclusion, you're saying is not the right way to look at it.
That's right. Now, you got to look at this all in the context. And that's why I think that's why these stories and the in-between stories are so important. And that's where the service is. That's where the sacrifice is. That's where you see people at their very best doing what they do and what we've always expected Americans to step forward and do, in which they do so well. And it's why, even in the wake of something like this, I continue to feel optimistic about our country and about who we are as a people and where we're going ultimately. I just think we are a country of good people. We can't lose sight of that, and even in these setbacks. So I feel confident going forward.
Thank you, sir. Gentlemen, we have to take another short break. When we come back, we're going to finish up our last segment of the Chaplain's Christmas Show. And we've been talking about Afghanistan and all the noble warriors that served there over the last 20 years. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been doing our annual Chaplain's Christmas Show. We're going to wrap things up on that in a minute. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Over the last few months, I have traveled many miles while visiting the facilities and staff that make the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs the successful organization that it is. During these visits, I have met hundreds of our team members, and I am humbled by the work that they do each and every day. I relay to you that I have been very pleased with the attitude and professionalism that I have witnessed at both the veterans' homes and programs and service staff. I continue to get unsolicited positive feedback in regards to the way our staff engages with veterans throughout Minnesota. I am so proud of the work they do for our nation's heroes. It is an extraordinary honor for me to represent the veterans here in Minnesota. I assure you that we will be 100% dedicated to our mission of serving Minnesota veterans and their families.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. We've been talking about 20 years in Afghanistan and how that war ended, and how our troops should feel about the missions they were on. And, General, I want to thank you for joining us in the studio today. And I just want to follow up on that a little bit. It kind of echoes Vietnam for me, but we had a lot of troops over 20 years, served a lot of missions. We lost some folks, and we had a bunch of folks injured. How should we feel about them, and how should we remember those who have served so well?
Yeah, so you know, that's a great question, Tom, and I think it's really important to recognize that you know, our servicemen and women deployed, they went to Afghanistan for a very noble mission, and they went there to do their very best. They don't get involved in the politics of this. Their job is really to focus on taking care of their friends and accomplishing the missions that they're assigned. So when you look at these sacrifices, these immense sacrifices that have been made, you have to look at them in the context in which they are being made. These, you know, we do lose soldiers and Marines and airmen and in war. That's an unfortunate aspect of all of this kind of combat. It's going to happen, but the fact that they were lost in Afghanistan does not mean that those lives were lost in vain. Their sacrifices made something. Meant something at the time, and they mean something now. And I think that's a really important point to emphasize to the surviving teammates, and certainly to our Gold Star families and other families out there whose members were injured. These sacrifices meant something then. They made something now, and we have to honor that. We have to honor sacrifice and service in the context in which it's presented.
General, thanks for joining us today, and thanks for sharing
your
thoughts.
Great to be with you, Tom.
On this show, gentlemen, it's our tradition now to turn the mic over to Chaplain Colonel Buddy Nguyen, and it is the Christmas show, Chaplain, so I'm waiting for your words of wisdom.
Okay, Tom. Well, thank you. You know, once again, we find ourselves at the end of the calendar year, reflecting on the events of the past 12 months as we gather with our family and our friends, our loved ones, our neighbors, for celebration and sacred observances and holiday revelry. I remember being a 19-year-old private first class in Camp Casey, Korea back in 1990, and it was my first significant holidays from home, you know, Thanksgiving and then Christmas. And I was missing my family, serving overseas, and our armed forces were facing down Saddam Hussein in the deserts of Kuwait and Iraq. And during that 15-month tour, I really became, I went from child to man. I became a man in that environment. Endured a lot of hardship. Korea was a hardship tour at the time. We spent 32 days in the field in an exercise called Team Spirit, no showers. I had a Dear John letter come to me and a corresponding phone bill in the hundreds of dollars because we didn't have cell phones or internet or anything like that. So I was really helping AT&T out back then. But I learned how to become a part of a real team. And I remember going to the mess hall. We called it back then. Today we call it the dining facility. We went to the mess hall. And the battalion commander, the command sergeant major and staff were there, and they were dressed in their Class A uniform. It really represented the essence of servant leadership to me. And years later, I had the privilege of doing that myself, deployed overseas to serve those soldiers at a very, very special time of the year in a difficult environment. So without that, I wouldn't have learned how to lead in a manner befitting a person of faith. So if we look at the benefits of living a life of faith. If I was to say, Tom, I've got a drug that can reduce heart attacks by 10%, the FDA would put it into production immediately. Well, let's talk about the science of spirituality. 18 to 25-year-olds are the major segment of our population. Their spiritual awareness and spiritual core development are accelerating faster during this time than at any other time in their lives. And they're dealing with a lot of unresolved stress relative to the pandemic and civil unrest and things of that nature. And that leads to negative coping mechanisms, poor decision making, and impaired ability to bond with others. These have all been exacerbated by the events of the last 18 to 24 months. What does that lead to? Elevated rates of depression and anxiety, risk-taking, and defiance. But what I want people to understand and to hear is that if you're involved in a regular spiritual practice, as we talked about earlier, regardless of the religious affiliation, we talked about a 10% FDA approval. If you're a person who's engaged regularly in a spiritual practice, that is the most robust protective factor against suicidality, 50 to 80% as a protective factor. Major depressive disorders, risk-taking, substance use and abuse. And so this reality is borne out at this time of the year when we have a chance to stop and to slow down and reflect. And so I have, you know, this time of the year where we use words like nativity and good tidings and mistletoe and, dare I say, fruitcake. Maybe this is the only time of the year that we use words like that. But it's different. It's a different time of the year than the other times. So here's the two things that I encourage people to do. You know, first of all, work to safely but genuinely connect with those important to you. Personal human connection to engage tradition and worship and fellowship opportunities, because doing so allows us to fill our tank spiritually and emotionally as we look down the road ahead. As the saying goes, you know, you can't give out of what you don't have, and we're all called to love and to serve one another. And then secondly, because the holidays can be stressful and challenging, I encourage you to reach out to a battle buddy or a colleague who might be approaching that that red zone of despair. And when we talk to people we care about, we've got kind of that sixth sense. It's kind of a spiritual or an emotional or intellectual alert that goes off on the inside of us. And don't hesitate to ask the tough questions to get to the root of their concern, get to the base of what the problem is, and then provide encouragement and support. Let them know you're there for them. You love them, and you're going to go through this with them. And this selfless act is just as important as any material gift that someone can give. Reaching out in this manner has proven to contribute to a greater self-esteem, satisfaction with life, a lower risk of depression, better physical health, and a longer life. In other words, caring for others fulfills the law of love, as we see in the book of Romans chapter 13, verse 8. And it's the best gift we can give to others and to ourselves. And with that, I'd like to close in prayer. Gracious God and loving Heavenly Father, thank you for the gift of life. And I pray that we not take the blessings you've given us for granted, that our hearts would be filled with gratitude. And out of that abundance of gratitude, we share life, consideration, and love with all of those around us. And in so doing, to be your hands and feet. Be with our veterans, their families, especially our Gold Star families who are missing their loved ones at this time of year. Give us opportunities to cross their paths with that message that we have not forgotten their loved one, will always remember and honor their sacrifice. And we do all this to your glory, Father, and I pray it in your holy name. Amen.
Chaplain, we've got another guest for the end of our Chaplain's Christmas show, and joining us now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Tim Leonhardt. Tim, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. It's an honor being here.
Tim, the chaplain wants to say a few words to you and have a conversation. Are you ready? Are you bowing your head?
Oh, yeah.
Good man.
Tim, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today. And I have personally had interaction with the Patriot Guard in so many different ways and environments. I think about when I have deployed and they've been there to send us off, and when I return home, their Patriot Guard is there. Of course, as a chaplain, you know, it's very regular that I would be out performing a graveside committal with the family of someone who's being laid to rest. And of course, the Patriot Guard is there as well. And any kind of weather, any kind of environment. I mean, we've been out there in sub-zero temperatures, and those folks stand there and hold their flag with dignity and honor. Who is the typical person that would decide to become a part of the Patriot Guard?
Well, actually, just about anybody. We have people from high echelon down to just plain old workers. You know, it's not about rank. You know, it's all about wanting to give that honor, dignity, and respect to our heroes that have protected our freedom for all these years.
So, Tim, it's not a bunch of old Vietnam veterans?
No. Oh, no.
And do you have to be a veteran in order to be a part of the Patriot Guard?
No, you don't. In fact, we did a poll, not last year, but the year before, and it's only about 50% that's actually a veteran.
Hmm. And so for the work that they put in, this is all volunteer time, and a lot of them ride motorcycles, but they make their way to these events and occasions. What is it that they get out of this experience?
Oh, It's something internal. We don't pay anybody. Everybody provides their own transportation. They provide their own gear, flags, water, food, everything else. It's all completely volunteer. And the feeling that you get when you go and honor somebody and you see the family and how much you can see that they appreciate that ordinary people are coming to honor their loved one for what they've done for our country.
Yeah, that's really life-changing stuff. And we're so grateful, again, to have them out there and to be a part of what they do. I would say, as we look to the future, with really large-scale deployments winding down, and certainly, you know, we've got those veterans that are in their golden years, and our Vietnam vets, Korean War vets, as they are laid to rest. I know that the Patriot Guard is going to be there, and I think this is an opportunity, even though we're not sending care packages to the troops and things like that, being a part of the Patriot Guard is something that someone can do to really try to make meaning of their own experiences.
Yes, yes. It's an, you know, when you go to that flag line and you're seeing the families your heart, you can just feel it in your heart that it's something good to do.
Yeah, you know, I was out at the Wreaths Across America last weekend at Fort Snelling National Cemetery and saw some of those folks out there, and I purposed to get out and shake their hand and look them in the eye and say thank you for being here.
Yeah, yep, and that's what they appreciate that. You know, they don't expect it, but they appreciate it. It's something that they're doing for themselves, and any appreciation to it, they recognize it.
Tim, thanks for joining us again today, and I want to wish Merry Christmas to you and all of the Minnesota Patriot Guard riders.
Thank you, Tom.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
There's Tim Leonhardt from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard. Chaplain, just a few seconds left. Thank you for another wonderful annual Chaplain's Christmas show, and I just hope that all of our troops get home safely.
I agree. And thanks to Doug and General Votel and to you, Tom, for over 600 shows and giving me an opportunity every Christmas to be a part of this great event.
Thank you, Chaplain.
Thank you.
We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week. Chaplain Colonel Buddy Wynn, General Joseph Votel, Tim Leonhardt from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard, my co-host this week, Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we wrap up 2021 and look forward to 2022 with the Minneapolis VEA and the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Networks. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at Minnesota Military Radio.com.